Hey, welcome to this episode of Light 'Em Up. We take a deep dive on the criminal justice system, crime scene investigation, and leadership. We enlighten, educate, and empower others with the truth. Like it or not, the truth disturbs, the truth divides, but ultimately, the truth delivers. Hey, I'm your host, Phil Rizzo. I'm the principal owner of Rizzo's Protective Group. Hey, we are a high-risk security consulting firm headquartered out of Akron, Ohio, and with offices in the Bronx, New York, and Cerro Alto, the Dominican Republic. Hey, as we put the ball on the tee to line things up for kickoff, we speak life, health, and prosperity over each and every one of you, and we want to thank you for joining us. Tonight, on this exclusive edition of Light 'Em Up, we drill deep, vast, and wide with our special guest and dear friend of the show, April Littman, who recently completed her civic duty and had her day in court as a potential juror in the Show Me state of Missouri. You'll hear firsthand from her experiences and will summarize a few life lessons regarding her participation in the hallmark of the American system of justice, jury duty. Hey, before you can enjoy your constitutional right to a speedy trial, jury selection must first take place. While the case in general is decided on the facts, accepted and entered into evidence by the judge, the jury is the ultimate arbiter of the facts. The Sixth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, as we've spoken about before, guarantees the rights of criminal defendants, including the right to a public trial without unnecessary delay, the right to a lawyer, the right to an impartial jury, as well as the right to know who your accusers are and the nature of the charges and evidence against you. There are different types of juries. Most jurors will be selected to serve on a petit jury. That's right, petit. P-E-T-I-T, petit jury, one that is selected to hear and decide a particular case. If the case is a criminal trial involving a felony, a more serious type of crime, the law requires 12 jurors. In a civil case, only 8 jurors are selected. In municipal and county courts, where misdemeanors or a less serious level of crime are brought to trial, juries consist of 8 persons. If a trial is expected to last more than a day, some judges have alternate jurors selected in case something should happen to one or more of the original jury panelists. Unlike a petit jury, a grand jury hears evidence about crimes and decides whether or not a person should be indicted and tried for committing a crime. Also, unlike a petit jury, the grand jury does not decide guilt or innocence. If you are summoned to court to be selected for service on a grand jury, you will probably serve for a longer period of time than if you serve on a petit jury. How a person thinks about jury service is how a person conceptualizes democracy. I cherish democracy, and I believe it's worth fighting to protect. And I know for certain that the truth is under attack, and therefore, so is democracy. Hey, for me and for many others, I'm sure of it. I get a sinking feeling in my stomach when I know that I've received a summons for jury duty. For me, it is Navy SEAL Hell Week. I can barely eat for 2 days following the receipt of the notification in the mail. And I gotta tell you, I really must have upset or rubbed someone the wrong way down at the courthouse or the clerk of courts, whomever issues the jury duty summonses and the notifications, because it seems like I get a notification every single year, even though the rules in Ohio say that you're eligible once every 2 years. Besides voting, nothing is as active and participatory in nature in democracy than jury duty. When you are called to be a juror, you become a very important person in our legal system. In the United States, our justice system is based on the belief that a just and fair result in court comes from having disputes settled by our fellow citizens. Very few of us ever have to go to court as plaintiffs or defendants, but when we do, we want fair, decent, and honest people to carefully listen to the evidence and decide our cases in an impartial nature, according to the applicable laws. Therefore, when we are called to serve on a jury, we have an obligation to our fellow citizens to honor the summons and appear at court. Some cases are more important than others, but to the parties involved, only their case is the most important, and they deserve to have it decided by honest and impartial jurors. In Ohio, persons are selected for jury service by a random drawing from either a list of registered voters or a combined list of the registered voters and the list of licensed drivers residing in the county or city that the court serves. Guidelines assure a random selection of a fair cross-section of the community. Jurors are randomly assigned to a jury pool or pools during the week of their service. Jury trials are held in the United States District Courts, the Common Pleas Court of each county, the municipal courts, the county courts, and in some cases, juvenile and probate courts as well. In Ohio, a new list of eligible jurors is compiled each year. To serve on a jury, you must be a bona fide resident of the geographical area served by that particular court. Ohio jurors must be at least 18 years of age, and they must not have lost their right to serve on a jury by having been convicted of certain types of crimes, or must have had those rights restored. Beyond that, everyone is given the opportunity to be a juror, regardless of age, race, color, creed, or occupation, as long as that person is 18 years of age, minimum. The term voir dire, we'll say that again, voir dire is a French word for to speak the truth. Hey, let me tell you, a lot of people need to be voir dired under oath. Believe that. Many of our listeners may not know this, but the voir dire process is the process by which potential jurors are questioned by either a judge and or a lawyer to determine their fitness and suitability to sit on a jury. It also serves as the preliminary questioning process of an expert witness to determine his or her competency in order to give sworn testimony as well. Hey, congratulations, April. You've survived your jury duty experience. Welcome to the big show. We're honored to have you. Welcome to Light 'Em Up.
Thank you for having me, Phil, on your show today. I'm really glad to be here.
We're definitely honored to have you. And we're going to cover a lot of ground, and we're going to educate and empower the people. So let's dive right in. Hey, for starters, tell us, was this your first time being summoned for jury duty?
Actually, this was my second time. I was summoned a little over 20 years ago, and I was instantly excused by the call-in recorded message, so I never served.
I see. Okay. And as best you can recall, can you paint a picture for our listeners how the process began? First off, let's start with how many people were summoned to serve.
To me, it looked like there were about 350 to 400 of us in total were summoned to serve that day. We were all split up, though, and went off into different courts. So to me and to the others around me, as we were discussing, it appeared that no one was cut in the pre-telephone cuttings.
I see. From our pre-interview research, are we correct that you and your other community members were seated in that big, expansive room surrounded by glass and windows that appeared to have gray chairs, as the photo on the website for the St. Louis County Circuit Court showed?
Yes, that photo and the website were both accurate.
I see. So I saw the jurors can park for free in the Shaw Park and Drive Garage and Transit Center at 232 South Merrimack. That helps tremendously with potential expenses. Now, in Ohio, petit or regular jurors receive $10 per half day and $20 per full day of jury service, and payment is received only if you're called in and appear for jury service. Our research department, in anticipation for this interview, we learned that in Minnesota, in the state of Minnesota, the state Supreme Court there determines compensation rates, and as of 2019, jurors receive $20 a day and 54 cents per mile for round trip from their homes to the courthouse. As well, we learned that in sunny Florida, in Florida State Court, jurors who are not employed regularly or continuing to be paid are paid $15 a day for the first 3 days and $30 per day starting on the fourth day of jury service and each day afterward, but they're not paid for travel from their home. We also learned that federal jurors are paid $50 a day. While the majority of jury trials last less than a week, jurors can receive up to $60 a day after serving 10 days on a trial. Can you share with us how much was the compensation for your participation.
I received a check for $10.14 from the county treasurer for my day of jury selection participation. And the court did admit that that was woefully low.
Yeah.
They joked about it, as a matter of fact.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I wonder why they paid 14 cents.
That's what I wonder. Where did that come from?
That's funny. That's funny. Hey, typically, when picking a jury, it's a very strategic and deliberate process. The attorneys are looking for people who need to be challenged off or removed from the jury pool. And the questions posed to the potential jurors have to be designed to uncover those who should be removed. For our listeners, we want to make sure you know that you'll be expected to share facts relating to your background, experiences, opinions, beliefs, and values, as well as things such as your current or previous occupations, educational background and training, socioeconomic status, as well as media viewing habits, and maybe a general idea of your internet footprint and usage. Also, other background characteristics that may affect your potential decisions in the case you'll be sitting for. Also, these factoids about yourself can include your life experiences, such as what experiences you bring as a juror to the case, and, for example, have you ever been a victim of crime or any involvement in any prior lawsuits that can affect how you would view the case, how you would view the evidence, witnesses, and or the parties. Now, these are the most important things to know about jurors because they'll serve as the framework or filter through which the jurors will view the case. So we pose this question. In your personal opinion and from your firsthand experience and knowledge, do you feel that the stage was set properly for you as a potential juror? Now, by that I mean, did the attorneys and the judge explain the process, stressing the importance for honesty and candor, in order to perhaps help jurors to acknowledge and filter biases that we all possess?
Instructions were pretty well explained, I must say, by the bailiffs, the attorneys, and the judge. And we were thanked several times by the people who were serving the court. It was a long day, but I will say we were prepped as we went along in an efficient enough way, yes.
That's good. That's good. It's always good when they help you along in the process. Another crucial aspect of a successful voir dire requires that the potential jurors talk and talk some more, and not simply listen to the attorneys wax on and on. Now, the state couldn't liquor you up in order to get you to talk. That wouldn't be a good scene at all. And In my criminal justice and forensic science classes, we have one basic rule. If you don't raise your hand in order to be recognized, then you're not going to be permitted to talk. So the raising of hands increases individual participation by students in class, as well as jurors in the voir dire process. How did the attorneys get you collectively to speak? Did they call on you by juror number? Did you raise your hands and wait to be called on?
We were asked questions as a large group, and we were asked questions as individuals. You have a paddle in your hand with a number on it, and when you'd like to speak, you raise that numbered paddle, and they call on you by number. They look at their reference pages, and then they reference you by your name at that point. So when we were asked general questions, it was kind of to glean a basic understanding, you know, that we understand how things work. Like one of the general questions was, do you understand in this country that a defendant is presumed innocent until proven guilty?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody kind of shook their head yes. Now, if you didn't understand that, you were to raise your paddle.
I see.
So that's an example of a general question. But then there was specific individual question after that.
Okay, that makes sense. It brings to mind a little bit like an auction where you raise your paddle, you know? That's interesting. Hey, we know it's imperative that the attorneys adopt the proper orientation and approach from the outset with the jury pool. For example, approaching the voir dire questioning as a conversation, not a job interview. And in the process, at the same time being confident but not cocky or rude in order to encourage and reinforce full potential juror participation, and doing all this while actively listening to jurors in order to yield the best results. In your opinion, and this may be similar to an earlier question that we may have had, but do you feel that the proper foundational approach in the jury seating process was taken from the beginning?
The attorneys were making efforts to seem relatable. For instance, they were telling some lighthearted jokes to try to, you know, lighten the mood amongst us. They even remarked how they were aware that they spoke loudly. All this was to make them seem more relatable, to get you talking so people would relax. A lot of people didn't want to be there, you know, because it took a chunk of time. Ours was about an 8-hour day. But they did talk us through it, and they tried to make it a somewhat seamless process as best as they could.
I see. That's good. It makes the day more palatable when they're plugged in and they're trying their best to help. Because actually, you are there to help them in the process. So it's important.
Yes.
It's very important. We're talking with April Littman. She is a music business insider, consultant, and an academic educator about her experiences on jury duty, which she recently had. Hey, to piggyback on top of that previous question, was the voir dire questioning approached in a conversational manner, or did they make it feel more like a job interview? Or even more intrusive, and perhaps even a process that was uncaring and or cold in nature in any way, shape, or form?
A lot of personal questions are asked of the potential jurors. That I was a bit surprised. I didn't think they would be digging so deeply into our personal lives and our personal experiences, but they did. You know, they were directly asking us questions about hardships that we had faced, encounters with violence, any past criminal behavior or activity, convictions. You are asked this in front of everyone and expected to answer under oath truthfully. And no, don't expect a lot of emotion from the attorneys, even if you're sharing really difficult subject matter.
Yeah.
They're not going to show a lot of empathy. There's not going to be a lot of nonverbal expression, you know, like to validate you, things like that. It's business. They just want to get to the bottom of what has happened with people and in people's lives and how that may or may not match up with their trial.
Yeah, that makes sense. And what you shared leads right into this next question, and you've already alluded to the answer. You had mentioned that it's business. But nevertheless, let's delve into it. Hey, looking back, in your estimation, did the court personnel take an active and interested role in listening to you and your fellow citizens as well, in the hopes of yielding the best results for all involved, or did it appear just to be another day at the office for them?
It's hard to say what was going through the attorneys' minds, but they made clear they expected the defendant to go on trial the next day, and they felt that his particular trial would only last one day. They made clear witnesses would be called, including police, and they seemed to, this wasn't stated, but they seemed to understand already what was going to happen the next day. So, yes, they were trying to make the process of jury selection a good process and an accurate one, but I didn't walk away feeling that there was anything exceptional about what I went through that day. It was almost like they knew he was going to take, you know, trial the next day, and they kind of already knew the outcome, but no one's going to say that directly.
I see. Yeah. It's a little disheartening when you think about it, if they already anticipated the outcome, but I understand exactly what you mean. In your voir dire experience, were you required to share any personal facts about yourself? And if yes, in the spirit of educating and empowering our listeners as to what they may one day be exposed to, share with us, if you would, any of those facts and details.
We are expected to share about our personal experiences. The particular criminal case that this was for was a domestic violence case, and the jury was asked to share about their experiences with such a thing, including sexual crimes and violence. We were directly asked about that. I heard people around me stand and report things that were heartbreaking, disturbing, and it really just goes to show how many of our fellow citizens have endured hardship, difficult things, and it was quite shocking how candid some people were in sharing what they had been through, and as well, I was expected to do that.
I see. And for both prosecution and defense lawyers, the voir dire can work to identify jurors who can be fair and impartial rather than unfair and biased. And looking back and having the opportunity to reflect on your experience, can you share for what reason or reasons do you think the attorneys, including the judge, held a private sidebar for you specifically when all others expressed their information openly? This is information that you had shared with us in our previous pre-interview conversations, but share with us your thoughts on that.
I got a sidebar because I requested it. During the part of the examination when the prosecutor was asking us some general questions, she called on me specifically, asked me if I thought domestic violence should be a crime in this country. I answered her, but then she neglected to ask me if I had any experiences that might bias me or cause me to be impartial. Mm-hmm. She also did not verify with me my occupation. And with the others that she asked the same domestic violence question to, she did ask those things. And so I found it odd. I wasn't asked that. That's what led me on break to approach the judge and ask for a sidebar that I could give some personal experience.
I see. That makes perfect sense. And as a follow-up to that, in that process, did you feel that the process was fully fair or inclusive towards you? Or in any way, did you feel that the style and manner that you were approached and perhaps those specific processes were different from any of your other fellow members of the community? And if so, how so and why so?
In general, it did seem a fair experience, a fair process. I do wonder why they didn't ask me to verify occupation or more about my personal thoughts when they did others. I don't know if that's because they already know your occupation, they already know your level of income, and they already know your address from the information you provide them on the internet before this all takes place. I don't know if they had some biases, okay, against what they were seeing in the statistics they were reading on people or what, but I did find it odd I wasn't asked to verify in the same way others were. But overall, I feel like, as a whole, the process of questioning to potential jurors was balanced.
I see. And after a full business day of 8 hours at the courthouse, as best that you can without revealing anything that you might feel may be compromising, can you share with us what happened and why you feel you were cut from being a juror on the case that you were being voir dired for?
I did notice at the end, when they were making their selections, that any female who had stories of or involvement in or around domestic violence issues were cut. So if anybody had stood and shared particular hardship or knowledge of one in their family, friends, etc., they were cut. So I was cut with that group.
I see. April, you shared in our, for me, fascinating pre-interview conversation that we had that in some regards, this process was strange. How was it strange?
What I mean by strange is how candid, again, some potential jurors were in sharing about things that had happened to them. I saw a lot of incredible strength in that room that day, but I also saw a lot of vulnerability. And as an empathetic person, it just strikes me how much we've all been through, especially in these last couple of years from COVID on.
Sure.
People have been through a lot, and it was just striking to hear how many of us had adverse stories.
Yeah, it's definitely been a difficult time, to say the least. And you've already touched on this, but was there anything about the process that surprised, shocked, or dismayed you from wanting to participate in the process of jury duty another time in the future?
Well, when this whole process started for me this time around, I was reluctant. I knew it would be a time crunch for me, and I didn't really particularly want to serve. I was hoping to get cut early on, but nonetheless, I was called to the courthouse that day to go through the entire process. After learning more about this and experiencing it, if I ever were in the future to be called to serve, I don't think I'd be so reluctant. I think that I would keep more of an open mind and sit on a jury if needed and do it willfully and with a great attitude.
And had you been seated on a jury, were you scheduled to sit on a jury for a civil matter or a criminal one? I think earlier you mentioned it was domestic, but I was wondering, was it a criminal matter that you were...
It was. This was in the criminal court system.
Okay. And did you feel exposed or perhaps vulnerable in any way, shape, or form when you were called on and required to stand in front of everyone to answer questions that were directed to you?
I think anytime people are required to give deeply personal information, it can be difficult or produce feelings of vulnerability. People, I felt, were being straightforward and honest. But, you know, it's hard to spill your business, so to speak, sure. in front of others when you are not the person on trial. Yet there were moments where it felt like we were being questioned like we were on trial.
Yeah.
And I do want to note that the defendant, the accused, was present for this entire process. He was in the room and he heard every word we had to say.
Yes, yes. That's part of his constitutional rights.
Yes.
Very, very good. It's good to know they're following the rules in the great state of Missouri. Hey, did they ask you open-ended questions? For example, questions like why and what were your views on, and then you would fill in the blank? Or in any way, were you questioned in such a way so as to provide more information than close-ended questions, such as agree, disagree, or yes or no questions?
It was really a mix of both. They really mixed it up, about 50-50.
Hey, sometimes the truth is inhibited by the questions that we ask. And good lawyering involves never asking a question that you don't reasonably know the answer to. In the voir dire process, it's crucial to avoid asking for the socially desirable response. For example, questions that include phrases that trigger the looking good, in quotations, response from jurors. Things like fair and impartial, or bias or prejudice should be avoided where possible because these phrases inhibit honest and candid answers. April, can you recall if any of the questions that you were asked were loaded or slanted in any way, shape, or form, or the questions may have forced anyone to give a response that would help them to look good and not be as candid as possible?
If the lawyers were asking any questions that were loaded and slanted, it was hard to detect. But given any hardship you might share, there was this undertone that it's expected that whatever you have endured does not bias you in any way or cause you to be unfair or impartial. You know, when you were asked, does X, Y, and Z now cause you to feel unfair or impartial when thinking about similar circumstances, it was clear you were expected to say, no, this does not affect me. I am not biased. No one said, yeah, I'm biased now. This greatly affects how I would look at another person or another person's situation based on my own personal experience. Nobody said that. Mm-hmm, everybody said, yeah, I can remain impartial. Mm-hmm. And it was almost as if you were expected to say that.
Sure.
But, you know, our life experiences do color how we see things, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. The lenses we see through dictate how we interpret things that happen to us. Exactly. I agree 100%. You had shared that the case you were being slated for was criminal in nature, which meant the defendant would be facing time in prison if found guilty by a jury of his peers. As you looked around the room during the voir dire process, did you ever think to yourself or get the feelings that those people who were being voir dired were in fact the peers of the defendant or just the people who were available and present to sit on a jury? In essence, that justice on paper isn't the same as justice in reality.
As a matter of fact, when they were reading the defendant information in the beginning, they read his home address where the alleged crime took place, and they read his zip code. I happen to know that zip code really, really, really well. Given what I heard that day, looking around the room at who was there, I don't exactly feel like those present were a true sampling of the defendant's peers. But I assume the court was doing the best they could to make matches, of course. But just given what I heard, plus knowing where the defendant lives and some things about him, I don't think these were perfect matches for someone you would call a true peer.
I see. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. It does. Hey, we can all be slow to admitting our biases. Today, in every aspect of life, we hear so much about bias. Did you or any of your fellow jurors uncover any personal biases that you may not have known about prior to your exposure to this process?
Personally, I feel solid. And myself, people I was in the room with, I don't think anybody shared anything out of the ordinary in terms of biases. But bias, that's more of a theoretical question. Everybody projects how they frame the world to some level. And if people can truly remain unbiased, I'm not really sure how to detect that. I'm not sure it's even truly possible given what might be in our subconscious, you know, with our understanding of things. But they attempt to choose people who aren't biased in one direction or the other. But the philosophical question still remains, is that even possible to do?
Yeah, yeah. No, I get your point. I follow what you say. April, did either side's attorney or the judge fail to ask any questions to you that you thought should have been asked or would have been relevant to your experiences?
Well, like I said, I wonder why they didn't ask me some of the same follow-up questions that they did the others. How do they choose who they ask those follow-up questions to versus not? But they have to get through a lot of people, so time is of the essence.
Sure, sure, absolutely. Hey, we're talking with April Littman. She is a music business insider, consultant, and an academic educator about her jury experience. Were there any triggers or examples of something in your past that may have upset you in the process of answering the attorney's questions?
Well, apparently children are involved in and around the case that I was there for. And anytime children are involved, that's particularly pulls at the heartstrings. You always want what's best for children and they stay protected. And it was alluded to that they were involved in this case, perhaps in some negative ways. And so my ears always go up as I have a great heart for children.
Sure, absolutely. Whenever there's kids involved, it makes it doubly, you know, worse immediately because you don't want them exposed to it. April, so that the jurors don't fall asleep in the process, the attorneys have to keep them participating and actively involved. I know of two useful approaches to revitalizing participation. Those approaches are, for example, A, interspersing majority response questions, and B, using the springboard method, where you ask one juror a question and use the answers to talk with the other jurors about the topic. How well, in your estimation, did the attorneys hold and maintain your interest with their interactions with the jury pool?
Both of those methods of questioning were utilized. They did go back and forth between them. I felt that they were doing this in order to keep us alert, in order to make the experience as pleasant as possible. I do think that it was effective in them doing this.
In the process, were you able to take any necessary cover that you may have needed, or did any juror have any chance to hide out or shy away from any direct questioning?
No, there was really no ability to do that. You couldn't really dodge a question. The best you could do is if you need to privately sidebar to give a response, you may request that. But like I said, I was the only person that requested a sidebar.
I see. In your estimation, did your experience or the experiences of your fellow jurors seem to matter to the attorneys?
Like I said, don't expect to see a lot of empathy about your situation from the attorneys. Your traumas or the things on your calendar overall don't really matter. It may get you excused from jury duty. It may not. The court doesn't care what your religious or moral opinions are. They don't care if you have medical tests the next week. They care about, you know, getting through the process and getting to the bottom of the truth.
And that leads right into my next question. What do you feel mattered the most in the overall process?
Well, the process was a mix of efficiency and due diligence. And I feel that they are trying to distill down to a final conclusion for the defendant. You know, what is the truth? But the truth is going to be how the court sees it. Okay, not what you think, not what the defendant even thinks, not what the prosecution thinks. It's going to be what is provable, I think. It's the truth is what the court deems is the truth.
Yeah. And why do you think the prosecutor forgot to ask you if you had anything that might make you unfair or partial in your responses?
That I don't know.
You spoke very briefly in our pre-interview conversations that you had a feeling that the case you were going to be seated on seemed to be more about payback than anything else, that going to trial was more about a heated or contested divorce and maybe a volatile marriage whereby the wife didn't like the idea of the divorce or that the defendant wanted a divorce. Now, if reactive abuse was a driver ever in the case. Talk to us, if you would, about reactive abuse and how not blowing up emotionally is crucially important in interpersonal relationships and how it can sink a person and how it played a role in this specific case.
Yes, this was all alluded to by the defense attorneys that what the defendant was being accused of might be a situation of payback or a wife being upset at some things that were happening. So she struck out against the defendant as a way to cope, perhaps. This is not said directly. This is all alluded to. And so the takeaway, most definitely, from this is that in relationships, in the workplace, as in society, be very, very careful about how you react to things you don't like. Because even if your strong reaction to something is justified, if you blow up and that's justified in your mind, even if you are truly innocent, your reactions can be used against you. And the defense made that clear. It's what happens, you know, your reactions can be used against you. It's really important that you stay in control.
Sure, absolutely. Do you think the race of the defendant or the race of the potential jurors mattered or was involved in any of the process?
It did not seem to me that race was an issue in this case.
Hey, April, can you expand and expound for us on the words you expressed in the pre-interview conversation regarding your thoughts on more money, more power, wins the day in court?
The defense made it very clear to us that credible witnesses can be key to a case. And so what is credible? Well, it seemed to mean that a credible witness is a stand-up citizen, whatever that means, someone who is considered to be a stand-up citizen. You know, if you're having a situation such as this, getting qualified, highly knowledgeable attorneys, very important. Not everyone can afford that. So it just seems like the old thinking that power is what matters, you know, having enough money to yield power is what matters. There still seems to be that undertone in today's society and in the court system. You know, you need to be able to afford things to have a good defense, and not everybody can do that.
No, that's true. Absolutely. And in your opinion, did you observe or witness any glaring or perceived conflicts of interest in the case you were going to be seated for? And if yes, would you be willing to share any of them that stuck out specifically for you?
We did go through a portion of questioning where we were asked if we knew anyone else in the room. And some people did know each other. There were some neighbors that were there. But one gentleman did say he knew the judge himself from high school and that they had seen each other since at reunions and things like that. We all found it strange afterwards that the gentleman who knew the judge from high school was chosen to be seated on the jury. He was.
Wow, that is interesting right there. Yeah, I would think that that would be a conflict of interest, knowing the judge. But then again, what do I know? Hey, if you watch the movie The Godfather or Goodfellas or any good mob movie, there are some general life lessons that you can take away from that genre of movies. Specifically talking to the movie of The Godfather. Leave the gun, take the cannoli. More in general, watch out for the double cross of Ruski or the double cross. And don't let your weaknesses tackle you. Do you feel that there were or are any life lessons that could be extracted from this process that you'd be willing to share with us?
Well, I've got to say, and like I told you before, no crying in baseball. I think that was Tom Hanks who said that famous line in a movie.
Absolutely.
No crying in baseball, no crying in the courts. It is serious, and your emotions, they want you to shove them. That's for sure.
I see, for certain. Hey, as we bang down the gavel to end what I'm sure our listeners will agree with me has been a most enlightening and useful discussion. You know, it's important to remember that the role of the jury in American jurisprudence is to provide unbiased views or resolution to evidence presented in a case in a court of law. Jury service helps to support fairness in trials. Jury service is able to give impartial viewpoints on cases that are presented in court. Overall, the jury service system is vitally important to democracy because of the unbiased, impartial viewpoints that can be derived from our citizens who are selected from a wide cross-section of society. April, do you feel like you honored your civic duty, or was it an experience that was less than satisfying in some way?
I do feel in the end that I honored my civic duty. And I realize that this is a process we should all be aware of.
Absolutely. Well, that's good to know. That's good to know that you thought it was a process that was important and you participated in it and did your part. If you had to sum up your voir dire civic duty jury selection experience, can you dismiss us from today's interview and educate and empower our listeners if you would? Finish this sentence for us if you would, please. My voir dire jury experience was...
My experience was an example of familiarizing yourself with the system. After going through this, I really believe that you should read all instructions and website info ahead of time when you're called to such a thing. Know your rights in this country. Don't ever go into the court system blind, whether you're a witness, potential juror, a defendant involved with prosecution. Know how things work. You know what you will and won't be held accountable for. Prepare yourself by utilizing resources like if you need to give a deposition, Rizzo's Protective Group Deposition Prep Services.
Oh, thanks.
Don't go into the legal system blind. I think having knowledge about what to expect will help you when you have to participate in some way. And the other thing I really want to emphasize is in some previous episodes of Light 'Em Up, you've had special guests tell us that the truth is what happened. And I find that to be an overarching theme here. You know, the truth is what happened, and what happened will be how the court sees it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that plug. I'm so grateful to you.
No problem.
Absolutely. The truth is what happened. And like we say, like it or not, the truth disturbs, the truth divides, but ultimately the truth delivers. And we've had the pleasure and the honor to talk with April Littman. She is a music business insider, a consultant, as well as an academic educator. And April, we just want to extend our appreciation to you. We want to say thank you. Thank you, thank you, mille grazie in Italiano, for your time, your talent, and experience in sharing this with us. We want you to know you always have a home here with us on Light 'Em Up.
Hey, I want to thank my friends at Innisfree for their promotional products and underwriting. Their fresh-squeezed hydrating green tea, loaded with amino acids and antioxidants, help replenish and neutralize skin for that natural glow. Want to know the best part? Their tea is organically grown and chosen for skincare from 3,301 Korean native green tea varieties. The winning 1-2-3 punch combination consists of the youth enhancing serum with black tea. Then you just dap a little bit of the eye serum underneath your eyes, and finally the enhancing cream. Oh my goodness. Like Muhammad Ali used to say, I'm pretty, I'm still pretty. They offer innovative beauty solutions for men, also powered by the finest natural ingredients responsibly sourced from Korea's pristine Jeju Island. Their proprietary extraction methods preserve the purity and potency of these wholesome ingredients from plant to bottle to your skin, offering advanced formulas that safely address all skin concerns without the use of harmful chemicals and preservatives. With the wonders of nature at the heart of Innisfree, they take care to preserve and protect the environment in all that they do. We want to thank our friends at Innisfree for their promotional products and underwriting of Light 'Em Up.
Hey, don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube and Instagram at Rizzo's Protective Group. We're very excited about being ranked 10th out of the top 35 criminal justice podcasts as ranked and listed by FeedSpot. Hey, don't forget to subscribe to FeedSpot at www.feedspot.com. And please, por favor, per favore, visit our friends at https://newsly.me. Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them to you in a natural human voice. For the first time in the history of the internet, the entire web becomes listenable. You can browse articles from topics you choose and start playing. Hey, stop scrolling, start listening. You can follow any topic, as specific as you like, from sports, science, to Bitcoin. It'll find you the latest articles and read them to you. Hey, it's as easy as that. And to top it off, they have podcasts as well. Explore trending podcasts from over 50 countries. Our podcast, Light 'Em Up, is there too. I started using it as my default podcast app, and you can too. Download and use Newsly for free now from www.newsly.me or from the link in the podcast description liner notes and use the promo code Light 'Em Up. And Light 'Em Up in this case is spelled L, the number one, GHTEMUP, all one word. That's L, the number one, GHTEMUP, all one word.